back to the Johnny Londoff Chevrolet Line Change on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Eric, TJ, Hannah, and Matt with you. Cam is still vacationing, but we expect that he will be back soon. 855-282-8255 on the text line and also on the Ryan Kelly phone lines. And joining us now on the Ryan Kelly phone lines is Jeff Gordon of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jeff, how are you, sir?
Well, yeah, I guess I'm better than Kim Anderson, man. That was a little tough, this year. The depth marches are never fun.
Yeah, well, rough season. Everybody knew it was coming, but it's still sad to see that it worked out so badly. I mean, worse than even I think his detractors could have imagined. But you wrote a really good article today talking about how this, coming off of three straight 20-loss seasons for the first time in not just Mizzou history, but SEC history, and an empty building most nights, some people might think this isn't a very good job, but there's a lot of things that would lead you to believe that this is maybe not a top-tier job, but on the tier right below that around the country.
Yeah, they put the word out here the last couple weeks that they're willing to pay, and that means, $2.5 to $3 million, maybe go a little higher than that if they can get somebody exceptional. And that is certainly a far cry from the $1 million they were paying Kim Anderson. So I think when you put money on the table, that starts getting people's attention. And then you look at the rest of the situation. Campus atmosphere, that's generally good. I think we've moved past the unfortunate turmoil that really had everybody up in arms a year ago. And it's, there's just a lot there, facilities, arena. It's a league where you have a chance to compete versus going into, if you're trying to coach in the Big 12 or the Big 10, it's so deep and so tough. So, yeah, I think on balance with the money, facilities, arena, league, an opportunity too with a very low bar. Your previous coach was so poor that if you can get up to 20 wins, you're a hero.
The guy I would really like to see, I think, and a lot of people are talking about, is Tom Crean at Indiana, but he is under contract for a few more years there. We'll see. There's been a lot of different rumors about whether they might want to move on from him after a rough season, even though they won the Big Ten championship last year. Do you think, ultimately, that Indiana will want him back? And if not, do you think there's a pretty good chance he would want to come to Mizzou?
It seems like that is it's sort of like the obvious choice. Now, we've had an obvious choice before, with Matt Painter, and it disappeared at the last second. That was unfortunate. I think this time it makes sense for everybody. The expectations at Indiana are extreme. He's been successful, but he's also had some inconsistency. He's a guy that the money at Mizzou will be good enough to make a lateral move. The expectations won't be nearly as sharp and tough. And then, look at what he did at Indiana when they were in tough shape coming off of some, sanctions and some problems that they had. He was able to lead the cleanup, kind of the same job here. It just seems like a great fit for Tom and a great fit for Missouri and maybe a chance for Indiana just to strike a mutual agreement for him to depart so he doesn't have to buy out and they don't have to buy out him.
Jeff, how do you think that negotiation would go? Because if I'm Indiana and I see him trying to walk, don't you try to get him on his side of the buyout there instead of having to either one firing him, which has been part of it? If they don't get that negotiation, there's been quite a bit of talk about how that will go down. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a challenge, but when both sides see that, hey, it's the right thing. So like when Frank Haith left here to go to Tulsa, it was like, he's out the escape hatch and they got a fresh start of coach. There's a lot of pressure at Indiana to just move him out. And if he held his breath until he turned blue, he could make them cough up money to do that. But because Missouri's got the door open right now, the opportunity to jump right away, maybe they just reasonable people negotiate just to walk away, which doesn't happen a lot, I admit. But really for both sides, it's a nice outcome. So he has some leverage because, he does have credentials, as you noted, and to fire a guy with that left on the contract and what he's done, that would be something they'd rather avoid.
Do you think there's any chance he would jump from Missouri even if Indiana decided they'll take him back for a year?
Under that circumstance, probably not. But it just has gotten to such a break point that it's kind of hard to imagine. I don't think he would just walk away if he had another chance to win, because you could always reload at Indiana. I guess there's a chance that he wants a fresh start more than the alumni, but again, that's it's really one of these situations where neither side likes each other anymore, or they just go to court and say, let's end it.
Hey, Jeff, what are the odds that you think that Mizzou could once again go down maybe the lesser-name coach route and give another guy a chance to grow with the program? I mean, do you think it absolutely is a chance that they have to get a guy like Tom Crean that's already established, or they could potentially bring somebody along that maybe tries to build the organization along with him?
Yeah, there's some guys that are out there. Keats, the guy that's talked about quite a bit to go to North Carolina State, that seems to be the job that he would want, jumping up from, I guess it's Wilmington, and to go there. And, you know, that's a prime guy. But I think he's geared towards, right now, his mindset's maybe the NC State job, if he could stomach working for WL. You hear Chris Holtman, that's now certainly not that's an established guy now at Butler who may be looking around. In terms of the top mid-major guys, the guys that could grow into it, there are some people out there, but I believe there's a lot of pressure on the Mizzou from serious boosters, money people, to grab somebody established, if at all possible. You even hear about Drew coming up from Baylor because of the situation down there becoming toxic for the whole athletic department. So, you know, most of the names you hear are guys working someplace else. Frank Martin's got a $4.8 million buyout. He could be a factor here if some things don't work out with, let's say, Crean or Holtman. So, yeah, you're not hearing a lot of mid-major. It seems like all the emphasis right now is trying to get a guy that might want to make the move for reasons like Tom Crean's at Indiana.
We're talking with Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatcher on the Ryan Kelly phone lines on the line change driven by Johnny Londoff at Chevrolet. Of the realistic or semi-realistic candidates, who would be your top one or two if you were making the call, Jeff?
Well, I know a certain colleague at the Post-Dispatch, Ben Fredrickson, has been really pushing Quanzo Martin, and that's, you know, Martin is also a very popular choice for people in Illinois. His situation in Cal is sort of up in the air. He's happy enough there, but there are obstacles. He's a Midwest guy. He's got more ties here. They have high admission standards. It's a challenging scenario there. He's done okay, but just okay. So that's another guy. I think my guy, Ben Fred's a little more excited about him than I am, but certainly the type of guy to look at. And so everybody, just getting it down to the handful of names. You know, I kind of agree with the critics who said Lorenzo Romar was a bad idea at Washington, but apparently with the Porter family package in place, Washington wants to give him one more chance, and also Washington does not want to buy him out. So Romar and Martin were two of the other guys you heard a lot about, and in particular, Romar looks like he's going to stay because the school up there won't pay him to go away.
What do you think the program, the realistic floor should be for Mizzou if they have the right coach there? What should people expect year in and year out?
Well, I mean, going to the NCAA tournament every year, that's a great goal, but it's problematic in a world now where all these schools are pouring resources into the coaching front. I mean, we see five or six programs in the SEC that have really made a serious commitment, and another two or three that aren't bad. Really, right now, only LSU's bad. Everybody else has got pretty good coaches. So, you know, you'd want to see your team regularly winning 20-plus games, bidding for the NCAA berth, at least being in the hunt. Maybe every third or fourth year you're down a little bit, but you never want to go down the 20-loss trail again. It is just so hard to imagine a program like Mizzou losing to schools like, you know, Winthrop and Eastern Illinois and UMKC and some of the others that have stepped on Truman here the last couple of years. Your floor should be, you know, 20-plus wins a year with the occasional 18-win clunker. But, you know, every year you got to be in there competing.
Jeff, a good point that you made in your piece was about how Kim Anderson and the recruiting failures that he had. Is that a situation for Mizzou that can be fixed now? Is it something that they can do? Is it important to bring in somebody that can mend those fences as much as it is to get a great name in?
Well, if a guy like Crean can go into Jeff City and get a guy that you didn't even recruit, and the guy's going to go to the NBA, Yeah, I think it's stages of things you have to fix. I mean, one, you want to do a better job of, you don't want to miss guys from Waynesville and Jeff City who are top players. You don't want to miss a guy down in Sykeston. You want to get your outstate guys, at least have a reasonable shot within state at keeping some of those guys. But like I noted, it's a national and the international deal. You've got to be on the summer circuit. You've got to be making relationships with kids, and kids can bring in other kids. If you start building a good rapport, you build relationships with kids, even if they don't all come to you, if the word gets out that you've got a good vibe going, you know, that's where it's done now. It's one thing to say, hey, let's close the borders, and some of that's true. But boy, by and large now, this recruiting deal it's the summer, and it's being out, and it's being visible, and it's giving kids an opportunity to play and giving them a chance to get the spotlight. Mizzou's going to be on TV all the time, just because every team's on TV all the time. So, yeah, you're not going to compete with Duke, and you're not going to compete with North Carolina or Kentucky for guys, but beyond that, you shouldn't be losing guys in Mississippi State or Auburn necessarily or South Carolina.
Jeff, if Mizzou were to go after a guy like Tom Crean, they probably at least have to match his salary, which is just over $3 million a year. What do you think their top dollar would be if they did try to go after the Butler coach and they did try to go after some of these guys? It seems like the boosters have learned their lesson not to go cheap and to go with a $1.1 million contract that Anderson was making. They're going to have to pay up if they want Mizzou to be successful and make some money. What do you think that top dollar is?
Well, what you're hearing is they could do three. And if it means they got to go a little higher than that, if it's the guy they're excited about, then they could maybe go as high as 3.5. They understand that if they don't invest money now in basketball, then it will be a vacuum that hurts the whole athletic department going forward. It's just, the reality is football can't pay all the bills. You're in the SEC. There's a lot of pressure from the conference to fix the problem. You got a lot of conference revenues. You got a conference network. You've got a conference that's trying to get better in basketball. There's pressure from the conference as well as boosters to get this one right and to spend the money. So given all of those things, I think they could go as high as 3.5.
I mean, that's a good point. I mean, they've had success initially, I think even a little bit more success than would have been expected in the football program the first 2 years in. But it really looked like an opportunity for Mizzou to spread its wings as a basketball program moving over from the Big 12. How important is it for it to fulfill that promise? Because like you said, I think that was something that the SEC was pretty sure they were getting over.
Yeah, they were. The one thing they really thought when Mizzou came over was, hey, oh boy, you know, maybe they're just going to be okay in football. And certainly didn't expect Mizzou to win a couple division titles. But boy, where the disappointment came quickly was in basketball, because they thought, hey, this is our chance to upgrade to basketball. And A&M as well, because A&M had a little bit of success going too. So they thought with the expansion, we're going to be better in this sport. And it's timely because, again, you have a conference network that throws a million games out. So, yeah, I think the league is got to be leaning on Mizzou to get this thing fixed.
We're talking with Jeff Gordon, the Post-Dispatcher, on the Ryan Kelly phone lines. He joins us now. Switching gears to the Blues, you obviously have been following the team for a long time. What do you make of the way that this season has gone? Obviously, it hasn't lived up to expectations. Where do you think it went wrong, and is there anything they can do in the near term to get it fixed?
Yeah, I think there was the thought going into the year that it was going to be a bit of a transition. You lost some veteran guys. You're putting out a lot on Jake Allen in goal, and you were going to have to find new leadership within the group. And you were mindful that maybe Hitchcock had run his course, which is why you lined up Mike Yeo to come in behind him. And maybe Armstrong's loyalty to Hitchcock just created a bad situation there by giving him having the coach in waiting. And this is a topic I'm sure Cam's enjoyed discussing. It's a tough deal, a tough arrangement. The players knew it was awkward. The coaches knew it was awkward. But, I think it's been a surprise that it's been this much difficulty. Yori Laterra just died. You know, they needed something from him, and he just died. Patrick Berglund stepped it up a bit, but, you know, Robbie Fabry getting hurt. And there's just not enough up front to make this, to create any sort of consistent energy in a league that's played so fast and with so many explosive players. They're just so far behind some teams, especially down the middle. So there's work to do. Doug Armstrong is going to have a good summer. They're going to have to find a couple forwards, and they really need a number one center because, boy, is there any team in the league that's weaker down the middle than this one?
What do you think they could do with Laterra? $4.7 million for the next 2 years. At this point, you know, he's not even really a top nine player, I don't think, on a good team. Do you think they could get anything in the trade market for him? Would you offer him up in the expansion draft to Las Vegas?
Well, realistically, the only way, you know, two things here. One, he's obviously buddies with Tarasenko, but at some point, that can only go so far. You're not getting any point production, even though you logged some time with 91 for much of this season. Your friendship only goes so far. There may have to be a breakup there. Frankly, probably the only thing you can do with them is go to a team like Las Vegas with expansion and say you have to get up to the floor. You have to spend a certain amount of money to be within compliance of the collective bargaining agreement. So to take this guy and his contract, we'll give you maybe X, Y, and Z. We'll give you some prospects. We'll give you some draft picks to take him away. And just to get you up to your salary floor and get his butt out of here, we'll have to pay you to take him. That's about the only scenario that I could see, other than just literally paying him to go away.
Wow. Well, Jeff, thanks so much.
Because that's an awful. He's been awful. So
Eric agrees with you.
Yeah. Well, I think
he has been smiling ever since you said that in here.
Well, I think most people, for some reason, though, the Blues don't seem to. I guess they're just trying to put a positive spin on. But everything you hear from the Blues is, oh well, you know, he's made progress. And Yo said, I guess today, that he's done well, moved down to the third line. And I'm just like, well, at this point, just admit it.
Right. Yeah. Jeff, I have a quick question for you just regarding the defensive changes that they've made with Shattenkirk gone. You're kind of alternating between Bortuzzo and Schmaltz now, but I think that it could be an alteration with Carl Gunnarsson as well. What is your opinion with those pairings?
Yeah, you know, I understand you're trying to get a look at Schmaltz. That has to happen at some point. I guess my biggest disappointment's been that Robert Bortuzzo showed a lot of promise. He's a big fan favorite because he's so aggressive. I'm surprised he's not playing, just logging more minutes and just let it go. I mean, he's known to take some gambles. He needs to maybe tone down the offensive forays. But I would just I want to see more him. And Gunnarsson, God bless him, steady guy, but he just doesn't bring. He just takes up some minutes. You don't want to use him in any high leverage situations. At his age, at this point in his career, you know, I can see playing the kid. I'd want to see Bortuzzo. I haven't been very excited about this rotation they've had going back and forth, and then the way they've integrated Schmaltz. So, another problem to address. I think they're getting a head start on next year, but in the meantime, you're still trying to make the playoffs.
Thanks so much for taking the time, Jeff. We appreciate it.
Take care.
Jeff Gordon in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. That's crazy what he said, but it's true. You paid this guy almost $5 million expecting him to be a top one or two line center playing with one of the best scorers in the league. And in the offseason, you may have to pay someone in the form of assets, draft picks or whatever, just to get rid of him. That's crazy. You talk about bad deals. That's about as bad as it can be right there.
Right. It will be very interesting to see who they protect and who they try to make a deal with to take part of that larger contract. You have him, you have Bomeister sitting on a large contract, which I don't see him going anywhere. But yeah, it'll be interesting.
I like the consensus that he had, going back to Mizzou real quick. I like the consensus that he took in that they have to get a big name guy. Like
they do.
They've opened up, they've got to spend money. You've got to do it. That was my biggest criticism of last time when this situation came around and they went after Kim Anderson. I said, open up the pocketbooks. I mean, you've got to do it. If you want to play ball at the level that they were, and around that time they were moving into that new scene in the SEC.
Remember, they
you got to go
though,
for it.
Matt Painter.
Well, yeah, I know you get it, but then after if you don't try once, doesn't mean give up.
Well, I get it, but I'm saying it's not that they missed the boat, but it wasn't as if they just had the idea. I think they settled on Kim Anderson. There was a reason that Mike Alden passed on him two or three different times and then finally settled on him.
I think
they went after Matt Painter.
I think the point is, if it is a mid-major guy or even an assistant, it better be because literally 10 people have said no.
Right.
Like, it better be, and you've made them good offers, but maybe Crean decides to stay at Indiana, and maybe Quanzo goes to Illinois because the Illinois job opens, and maybe he wants that more than Mizzou. And there's other circumstances. Frank Martin's buyout's too big, and he won't leave South Carolina. But you better have gone through, like, 8 or 10 guys.
Right.
Because I like Keats. For instance, at UNC Wilmington, he's got the pedigree. He's an up and comer, and he wouldn't necessarily be a bad hire. He might do very well, but I think it would be a disappointment to a lot of people if it's a guy like Keats, given all these other names.
The ghost of Quinn Snyder still kind of hangs over the big name assistant coming over from a school like Duke. But a guy that Gabe D'Armand mentioned in his article where he...
D'Armand.
I'm sorry. Wow.
Sorry, you did that yesterday too. I just okay. I know Gabe pretty well.
But a guy that he mentioned in his article was Jeff Capel. I think Jeff Capel was great when he was at Oklahoma. He's an assistant right now at Duke, and he's been, yeah, I mean, he might be waiting in the wings. A lot of guys have waited on Coach K in the wings down there. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about Coach K getting ready to step away or anything, but he's a guy that I think would fit well in this area and in this region.
And he's a little different than some because he has the head coaching experience. Like, he got the head job, did fairly well, and then came back. I saw Coach K Saturday night walking out of the tunnel before Duke Carolina. He just had the back surgery. He was walking slow. I mean, he looked like an 80-year-old dude. But I don't think he's ready to step away. But, you know, maybe Capel's the kind of guy that he figures, if I go back to coach again, I want it to be either at Duke or a program of that
level. One of my buddies who's pretty connected to the college basketball world said if Mizzou could get this and were really willing to do it right, they would go get Capel. And they would bring in Kim English as an assistant, and they would recruit the hell out of everybody, and that would fix it. But they're never going to go down the Duke path again.
You have to get a big name. I don't see it being any other possibility, and there's no way that the at least, 10 to 15 big guys that they're talking about that they're looking into are all going to reject Missouri. I just don't see that happening because it's not a terrible program to be involved with. In fact, I think it would be a good stepping stone for someone. And if you would bring in, you know, an assistant or someone's smaller name or another Kim Anderson type of guy, I think Columbia would actually be set in flames.
Well, and Jeff made a good point. The difference now is to the money. I mean, they're willing to open up the checkbook.
Right.
The Brentwood Bandit says, I miss the days of cocaine, great hair, and Elite Eight, so I wouldn't mind another Quinn Snyder.
That's my Mizzou right there.
What's interesting is I'm sure this doesn't happen, especially in the SEC. I don't know if it happens anywhere except for maybe Kentucky, but the salary is going to be higher than the football coach. Odin's making 2.3.
Well, Mizzou used to be for much of the last 30 years a basketball school.
You know, but I mean, it's just a sign of the times and when you get hired, too. I mean, you know, they could have, I guess, spent that type of money on a football coach. You know, they didn't need to in this situation. Right. You know, if Mizzou had been going 2-10, they would have had a different, you know, it would have been a different job they were tasked with for replacing
Finkel. It's about leverage. It
is about leverage. But we're talking about the SEC, too, where they're going to overpay for every football coach and they're going to underpay for just about every basketball coach outside of Calipari. They've brought some guys in recent years. I think Bruce Pearl's making some money. But Odom is making 2.3, and that's 13th in the SEC, I think. Mason is 14.
Yeah, if you want to play in the SEC with the big boys.
So potentially
we don't even know if, I'm sorry to interrupt. I don't think we know what Mason's is because it's private. So of the public, of the ones that are published, he's last.
So potentially then the new Mizzou basketball coach would be the highest paid state employee immediately?
Yeah.
On the text line, 314 says, have a good friend who is an Indiana grad and very knowledgeable basketball guy. He tells me that Crean has been a very poor coach for the Hoosiers. Tom Crean, his first year when they had one scholarship player coming off of incredible sanctions, was 6-25. Then he won 10 games, then 12. In year four, they were 27-9. In year five, they were 29-7 Big Ten champions. They won another Big Ten championship with 27 wins 2 years ago. Overall at Indiana, his winning percentage was .554, and take into account those first couple of bad years when it was a complete dumpster fire. If that's a bad coach, Mizzou would take that any day of the week.
I tweeted out something about them earlier today, and a bunch of Indiana fans found it and said, please take him. I said, Mizzou needs to, this is a two-man race. If they can't figure it out between Konzo Martin and Tom Crean, they screwed up.
I look at it this way, though. Indiana fans.
By the way, I was right yesterday. You guys, it is Kwanzo. It's pronounced, Rock, verify this with me, because it is Kwanzo.
I don't know. We call some people by their last names. Let's just call him by his last name. We're not calling Tom Crean Tom, getting him over. Let's just say his last name.
Call Tom Brady Tom, but go ahead, yeah.
Well, that's because
wow, you've seen him nude.
Well, that's your boy toy.
That's true. I hope to see Tom Crean nude at some point. Go ahead.
Aww.
Well, all right. So moving right along, what was I about to do? Just right then, I think TJ just blew me up.
While you were, I think we were talking.
Oh yeah. So the thing about it is Indiana basketball, they're holding it to the same standard as how you would say people in St. Louis would hold Mike Matheny to a standard. Mike Matheny gets beat up here when in some places the success that he's had would be welcomed with double open arms. I mean, it would just be just, I'm sure people in San Diego would love to have the type of success that he's been able to manage the Cardinals to. But basketball in Indiana is baseball right. in St. Louis. So what's going to be deemed as being respectable isn't going to be the same
thing. It's always about the expectations with where you're at. One guy's trash is another's treasure. So if they want to dump Tom Crean, that's trash that Mizzou, I'm sure, would love to have.
Well, a lot of trash is our treasure right now. But I will say that my uncle is a huge Indiana fan. Grew up in Fort Wayne. And he said he thinks not only does he think they're going to keep him, but he loves him and wants him to stay. So there's both sides.
Yeah,
for sure. It's usually always how it is.
Ulysses S. Grant on the text line says, just wait if the football team goes 7-5 or 8-4.
We will get a new contract. He will get a new contract above what the basketball coach gets. I would say this, if Odom flames out and is fired after 3 years, they'll open the checkbook for a football coach too.
You have to in the SEC. He's dead last right now because we don't know what they're paying Derek Mason at Vanderbilt. There's 13 schools that are public. He's last at 2.35 million. He's not making a whole lot of money. Football coaches make $4 million in the SEC. That's how it works.
Why wasn't I a football coach?
In the SEC.
I mean, Will Muschamp.
Those are hard jobs to get.
Like, I'll take you through. This is as of 2000.
No, I think it's pretty easy.
This is as of 2015. So I assume a lot of them get bumped as they go. But Will Muschamp's making three. Even Mark Stoops at Kentucky's making 3.26. Butch Jones is 3.6. Kirby Smart, his first head coaching job, coming at from underneath Saban, is making 3.75.
Really?
Yeah, they're.
Wow.
Brett Bielema's making 3.96. McElwain, 3.98. I'm not sure if they gave him a new contract after winning the East, but there are six coaches in the SEC making $4 million or more. Saban's making over seven. Sumlin's making five. And people are making some money here.
The difference is the big. I mean, that is just such. It's one thing to be at the bottom. It's another to have that big of a gap between even the mid-tier guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean.
But if you, like. You're in with the big boys now, and then we see this with the renovations, with the new facilities. Like, Mizzou realized, hey, we're in the SEC, and we're going to have to do things a little bit differently now. You get that money because you get that network, and you get a cut of that, and the national TV deals. But in order to keep up with the Joneses, you got to pay, and they're at the point now. They tried to do it on the cheap with a local guy. Now you go out and get the man, and that's going to cost you something.
They've got pushed to the point where they have to do it. I mean, you know, and last time, I mean, everybody was, you know, go after Shaka Smart, go after this guy, go after that guy, spend the money it takes to get him. Well, then you have what happened here happen, and now they're in a position where they have to do it. Sometimes in place, and Mizzou has never been a place that's just broke the bank to pay coaches until they've earned it, like Gary Pinkel did. So, I mean, eventually they had to come around and do it. Now they're at that point. But I'll tell you this much, though. People love to judge how good people should be by how much money they make, which I think is kind of ridiculous in some regards, but I mean, it's just the way it is. They're going to come in with the expectation of turning this thing around, and it's not going to be a go 15-14 or whatever.
No, it's not going to be a one season thing.
But the expectation is going to be such. They're going to want this thing to turn around right now. I'm not saying the administration. People that follow that organization, if you bring in a guy at $3 million, $3.5 million, they're going to want to see those results now.
I tell you what, I'm looking at the salaries here, and it's interesting the way they set this up, because they were actually, Kentucky spends the most on their coaches collectively between football and basketball. They spend over $10 million. But if you're spending $3 million on a basketball coach, that will be the second most anybody's paying in the SEC behind Calipari, who's making $7 million. Alabama's paying Avery Johnson $2.8 million. And on down the list, just the next closest is $2.2 million. Well, guys aren't making that much money in the SEC to coach basketball.
Because all of the profits going to football coaches.
In the vein of looking forward, the Blues just announced that they've signed Tage Thompson to a 3-year entry level contract.
There you go.
Right.
We talked about who would be the center next year, because as Jeff Gordon said, they're weak there. Well, maybe next year, or certainly the year after, this is a guy you'd look at as a potential top nine, to eventually top six center.
And that's what I was talking about last week. Tage Thompson is, you know, they were talking about maybe having a battle between he and Sanford and seeing how he plays out. Tage Thompson's 6'5". They're going to put a lot of weight on him. He's a big guy. He's done extremely well in all the leagues that he's played in thus far. And, you know, the first round draft pick for the Blues this season, I think that a lot of good things are going to come from him.
855-282-8255 on the text line. We'll talk more about that coming up throughout the program. 1 hour done. We got two more to go. You can always tweet at us as well, at LineChangeSTL. Eric Messersmith, TJ Mohanning, it's Matt Whitener. It's the Line Change driven by Johnny Londoff Chevrolet on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.